A few weeks ago, I read a large global company's business continuity policy. I mentally checked it against ISO 22301, the international standard for resilience, thinking about what was in the standard and what was I reading in this policy. That standard requires six things of a policy. This policy failed four of them. And here's the part that really stuck with me. Nowhere in that policy, not on a single page, was anybody required to exercise anything. You could comply with the entire document and never once test whether any of it worked in the BC program. That's not unusual. It's typical. Most resilience policies I read either are a mission statement with a logo on it or a 40-page plan pretending to be a policy with that policy name tag at the top. So today in this episode, I want to walk through what a resilience policy actually is. What should be in it? What should I expect to see? And the handful of things that go wrong. I'm Brian Strauser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath, and this is the Managing Uncertainty Podcast. So let's start with the thing that most programs just get wrong, and that is what a policy even is. A resilience policy is not your plan. It doesn't tell anybody how to recover a system or run a crisis or build a BC plan. It is the charter for your program. And it should answer three questions. What does the organization require? Who is accountable for it? And by what authority? I would think of it as like a three-layer stack. At the top of this is the policy. It's short. It's signed by an executive. It changes rarely. It says what the organization requires and who owns it. Under that are standards. Standards are the measurable requirements. How often do we update BIAs? What does a plan contain? How often do you exercise? And below that are the plans and procedures themselves, or maybe SOPs. They're the operational documents that your team actually runs when something breaks. When a policy tries to do all three of these things at once, you get that 40-page monster. Nobody reads it. Nobody can find the requirements in it, and it's out of date the first time that a minor procedure changes. So my rule of thumb, a good resilience policy is 3 to 5 pages. If yours is longer than that, it's probably carrying content that belongs in a standard or a plan. You should move it. So what goes into those 3 or 5 pages? Well, there's 7 things that I think need to be there, that the standard thinks needs to be there. So let's walk through them. Policy should start with a purpose and a scope. What does the program cover and what does it not? Business continuity, crisis management, IT disaster recovery, maybe all three under one resilience umbrella. What entities? What geographies? What subsidiaries? Scope ambiguity is where programs quietly die because the business unit that assumes it was out of scope or wants to find a reason to be out of scope is always going to be the one that has the disruption. Number 2, it has a commitment from your top management. Top management, of course, is how the ISO standard talks about your board and senior executives. Not from the business continuity manager, but from the CEO, the COO, your other executives, the board. As I said, ISO 22301 is very explicit about this. Policies belong to top management. And there's a practical reason beyond compliance. When you're asking a business unit vice president to give up a day for an exercise, well, the CEO signed this, lands very differently than my team needs this for compliance reasons. Number 3 is roles and authority. Who owns the program? Who owns a plan? And critically, who has the authority to activate plans? Who declares a disaster? Who stands up the crisis team? Who can invoke recovery spending? If your policy doesn't name decision makers or have a mechanism for this, then you're going to be negotiating it live at 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of a major incident. Number 4, the high-level program requirements. And this is where the teeth are. The non-negotiables, stated plainly. Every in-scope business unit has to complete a business impact analysis on a defined cycle. Every critical function maintains a current business continuity plan. Every plan gets exercised at least once annually. Everyone with a crisis role goes through training. Notice the verbs: completes, maintains, gets exercised. These have to be requirements, not aspirations. And I'll say it again because of how I opened this. If your policy does not require exercises, then you don't have a resilience policy. You have a documentation policy. Plans that are never tested are dusty things that just sit on shelves. Number five, name a yardstick. What I mean by this is, what's the framework you're aligning your program to? ISO 22301, FFIC if you're in financial services, NIST, maybe NIST to CSF if that is your world, one sentence. It can be a list of standards if you have to follow a few, but this tells your auditors and your regulators and even your own team, this is what good means. And it settles 100 future arguments about whether or not your program is doing enough. Number six, what's the cadence of review and what are the exceptions? The policy itself should be reviewed on a schedule. You probably define that in another policy, but usually it's annually, and you should make sure yours reflects that. There's a defined path that you should have for exceptions. That one matters more than it sounds, because if there's no legitimate way to get an exception, business units aren't going to just comply harder. They just ignore you quietly. A real exception process with a named approver and an expiration date keeps the policy honest. And lastly, measurement and reporting. How does compliance to the policy get measured, and who hears about it? Plan currency, exercise completion, BIA coverage, reporting to a governance committee or to the board or both on a schedule. A policy that nobody reports against is a suggestion instead of being a policy. And that is the whole document: scope, commitment, roles, requirements, framework, review, reporting. 3 to 5 pages, you could draft the skeleton of this in a day or less. Now, quickly, let's talk about failure modes, because I see the same ones everywhere. Where do policies go wrong? First are policies that are secretly plans, that they're written that way. It's 40 pages long. It's got a call tree. It's got recovery procedures in chapter 6. That is not a policy. That's a plan. Number two, missing things like exercise requirements. I'll keep hammering this because it's the single most common gap that I see, including in very large, very sophisticated organizations. Third, the wrong signature. This is a policy that needs to be signed by a senior executive. A policy that's signed by the BC manager or director has about as much authority as that BC or managing director has in the organization. Get it signed up the chain. And fourth, the time capsule. A policy that was written years ago, it's never reviewed, it's never been updated. The org chart has changed. Half the named roles don't exist. If the document names a department that you no longer have, then no one's going to believe anything else in that policy in it either. So three things you can do this week. Number one, pull out your policy. Read it cold like an outsider. Can you find the scope and requirements and decision authority in 5 minutes? If so, if not, you've found your project. Number two, take a look at ISO 22301, Clause 5.2, the requirements for a policy. Compare it. It's a one-page check that'll take you a few minutes. That is exactly the review I did on this policy I mentioned at the top of this episode. It took me less than a few minutes to really find those gaps. Number three, search the document for the keywords like exercise. If it's not there as a requirement, then add it before you change anything else. One sentence in a policy will drive more real capability than any plan template is ever going to do so. The thread through all of this is that a resilience policy is the shortest document in your program, but it does the most work. This is where your authority comes from. This is the framing for your plan, for your program, rather. Every BIA, every plan, every exercise you ever run is going to trace its legitimacy back to those 3 to 5 pages. Get the policy right and then give the rest of your program something to stand on. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Be well.